My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games and a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Hello, and thank you for joining us once again. Chris Unocero, Jay Binkley, myself, Nick Schwert. It was 7 days ago, almost at the exact same time, that the three of us were sitting here in this lovely studio in Mission, Kansas, talking about the then breaking news that the Chiefs were not going to be applying their franchise tag to Orlando Brown Jr. Guys, when that news broke 7 days ago, it was a big deal. It was somewhat shocking when we learned that the Chiefs weren't going to be tagging Orlando Brown Jr. We had spent the better part of the last several months assuming a foregone conclusion Orlando Brown Jr. would get the franchise tag as they tried to work out a long-term deal, and then we would find out what would happen over the next couple of months and over the next season, even if they didn't get a long-term deal struck. So we spent all of last week's episode breaking that down. 7 days later, at the almost exact same time, we learn of the news via Adam Schefter of ESPN that the Chiefs have signed offensive tackle, and I hesitated there because I almost said right tackle, Juwan Taylor of the Jacksonville Jaguars. He played right tackle almost exclusively in Jacksonville over the last four seasons. But it sounds like the Chiefs are signing him to make him their new left tackle. 4 years, $80 million, meaning the chase, the questions about what happens for Orlando Brown Jr. in the future in Kansas City are over. The Chiefs have found their new left tackle. And for the purposes of this podcast, guys, that means that it is probably one less position we have to discuss the Chiefs targeting in the first round of next month's NFL draft. Let's just start right there, right? Does that end the left tackle discussions for the Chiefs in the first round at pick number 31?
Yeah, I think it does. And when you're sitting there at 31 and you're considering getting a left tackle, they're not there. I mean, the Chiefs were shy on that a couple years ago when we talked about, you know, the Sam Cosmi sitting there, the Liam Eichenbergs, the Alex Leatherwoods. Guys just weren't there that they could really trust to be a left tackle. And I've always kind of thought this with Andy Reid, that there's two positions on the football field that I do not think he would dare play a rookie. You saw he wouldn't even put Patrick Mahomes out there as a rookie, and you saw the things he could do. And I get it, Alex Smith was here, but he's not Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is doing things at practice no one else could do.
Yeah, but he's
left,
better.
But left hat. But it was tough to watch that guy who became the NFL MVP just the next season, and you don't play him. So that just shows you Andy Reid in rookies. And this year they had to rely on him, because Patrick Mahomes took 17% of the cap. But two positions, left tackle and backup quarterback. I truly believe Andy Reid wants some kind of experience. It's why Chad Henne's here. Obviously, Shane Buechele is poised to be that guy.
R.I.P. Chad Henne.
But it could be Taylor Heinicke.
I was about to say, I was like, he's not dead.
His career.
Nothing happened to him.
But Taylor Heinicke, Andy Dalton, Carson Wentz, and people laugh and they'll scoff at some of these quarterbacks. But the bottom line is, Chad Henne, who much maligned Chad Henne in his career when he was a starting quarterback for the NFL. But what happened? He had to guide the Chiefs on a 98-yard drive. Like, who do you trust to do? That's all you need out of somebody. Just do what Chad Henne did. Facilitate the offense and have the gumption understand NFL defenses and being able to do it. But that's why he wants that experience, because of what Chad Henne did. And the other one's left tackle. The biggest thing about just keeping this thing going is keeping Patrick Mahomes upright. And you got to be able to protect him. And I get it, elite pass rushers come on both sides now. It's not like they say, well, we'll put our elite guy over on the left tackle because that's their best tackle, so let's put our best pass rusher on him. No, it's not what they do. They look at who your weakest tackle is, and they flip-flop these elite rushers in the NFL to take care of your weaknesses. But you are protecting the blind side of Patrick Mahomes, and it's important. And I never thought it was going to be a rookie. You're going to have to move down. Even if you move down and gave up a 1, 2, and 3 to just move down to like 15 if you use the Rich Hill trade chart, you're probably not getting a starter on day one at left tackle. I mean, that is so difficult to do and trust. And I don't know if Andy Reid has that trust, but I thought maybe a Taylor Lewan would have been signed here if you were going to draft a tackle so he can sit behind him. And even if Taylor misses all those games, you slot him in there. But it does open up right tackle for the Chiefs, because right tackle is the position I do believe will be there. Elite left tackles, you got to move. Getting somebody like Darnell Wright, who I really like, who played with Trey Smith there at Tennessee, first team all SEC, nasty road grading right tackle. He could be there at 31 if you didn't trust Niang or Darian Kennard to be those guys. I'd like to tell you more about Darian Kennard in the NFL, and we just didn't see it.
So that's an interesting thought. So you have now spent a lot of your cap space. We'll see how the contract is structured, right? But you're investing financially a lot in Juwan Taylor, which is, I guess, what most Chiefs fans would want to see for a position of value. Chris, do you still think that right tackle with Andrew Wiley signing with the Washington Commanders, do you still think that right tackle it should be one of the priorities at the top of the draft for the Chiefs?
Not at the top, no. And the reason why is just because I think we've seen them this year find value with the guy. Like, I mean, let's be honest about Andrew Wiley. Like, I've been debating with people all afternoon after that contract came out with him signing with the Commanders, 3 years, 24, so eight a year. Andrew Wiley should not be a starting right tackle in the NFL. Like, they had to do so much smoke and mirrors with him this past season to get him to play the position at an acceptable level. A lot of chipping from running backs, especially like Jerick McKinnon. A lot of chipping from tight ends, not named Travis Kelce. They would take guys like Blake Bell and Noah Gray, line them up over there to help chip the edge rushers there. He needed a lot of help this year for them to get to the finish line with him as their starting right tackle. They don't need to address it at the top of the draft. Now, if they were to do it, like you just brought up, Bink, with Darnell Wright from Tennessee, I'd be cool with that. Like, he's a very good player. I know that after the news came out a week ago, you had the Lewis Riddicks out there who were kind of tweeting some of the Darnell Wright highlights and whatnot from the combine. And we know how Lewis Riddick is, because he's got connections in there at the
Chiefs.
He just
slow that down because you want him to get to 31.
I know, right? So, like, he was kind of like giving it away a little bit. And a lot of Chiefs fans like, oh, he tweeted that out for a reason. So certainly they could go that route. But it isn't something that they absolutely have to do, because, as I brought up here before, and me and you have talked about the slot, Bink, the Chiefs would love to have an in-house solution at right tackle. They would love if Luke Niang were to establish himself as the starting right tackle. They would really love if Darian Kennard were to do it. I think it was very obvious that they traded back up into the sixth round last year because of the measurables that he has. So if they, and we know that the move they made with Juwan Taylor, this is a move where they trust their coaching a lot, because you're taking a guy who's never played left tackle, you're moving him over from right. That means you're trusting your coaching. You're trusting Andy Heck and all those guys to get him up to speed and teach him how to be an NFL left tackle. Well, then you're probably also trusting that you're going to be able to take someone with the measurables, like a Niang, like a Kennard, and turn them into a starting right tackle. So I would not be shocked if they didn't address it. If they were to, I'd be fine with it as well. But something tells me they're kind of leaning towards going the route of, let's develop a guy in-house.
I would be okay if Wiley was still here, to be honest with you, because he's familiar with that line. Obviously, Eric Bieniemy saw enough in him because he went to Washington. Eric Bieniemy wouldn't want any part of him if he didn't trust him. But obviously, that shows that he's got some trust for Eric Bieniemy to bring him in a tackle. It's just weird because you have two new pieces. I mean, you think about your offensive line. That's one good thing the Chiefs had going, that continuity that they were building towards each other. And now things are going to be different. We don't know much about Darian Kennard. I will say this. 21 of the last 22 draft picks are still on this team, whether on the practice squad, hurt, or whatever, or in the active roster. And all of them are on the roster, but Cornell Powell, who's on the practice squad, means their evaluation has been pretty good. So if they like that much of Darian Kennard, we'll see what happens. I will say this, though. Sometimes it takes linemen a year or 2 years. It just does. A Rick Fisher playing on the right before they trust him on the left. I mean, so what we'll see. Niang's, I'm not exactly sure. I think that
too much injury is too injured. Yeah.
Which is funny because Chase Young's is the best tackle he ever saw in college.
Yeah.
He's like, that's the number one tackle I saw when they played at Ohio State, played or USC.
So I think that we're kind of getting to the point now, and this is just the very tip of the iceberg with free agency and getting a sense of how teams view the market, right? Both, this gives you an indication of how they feel about their chance of getting a starting left tackle in the draft, but also what they feel about the free agents that are out there. Juwan Jones was not one of the big names, or Juwan Taylor, excuse me, was
You're
not
thinking Juwan Jones from Ohio State.
Yeah, was not one of the. He was not
Who's
one
gonna
of
be
the,
there.
Right, he would have. I think he would have been there at 31.
I think he's going to be.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay, so is that where we're going? No. I think
he wasn't putting it out there.
Right, he wasn't one of the premier names entering free agency that everybody was buzzing about. But here he gets a massive deal that indicates that the Chiefs feel like not only A, do we not love maybe our options at pick 31, but we think that our money invested here is going to give us a little bit more security, and we feel like this is a value play for us to get a guy who has never played left tackle full-time in the NFL, and we trust our ability, much like they did with Orlando Brown Jr., to shift him over to left tackle. And I think right tackle still being a question mark, it's important to remember, you're not going to enter the 2023 season saying, answered every question we had in the offseason. No, there's going to be one big question or two big questions surrounding the roster. And if I'm looking around the needs that the Chiefs have and the players that are going to be available to them in the first couple of rounds with those value picks in the NFL draft, it wouldn't shock me if right tackle is one of those picks where they say, or the spots where they say, yeah, going into the season with Kennard and Niang battling it out at right tackle, that's a big question mark, but we have to take a risk somewhere. So, with that being said, and I'm guessing if we did another podcast, which we will, 7 days from now, this answer will be a little bit different because there may be other signings, perhaps some big name signings for the Chiefs. But as it currently stands, right now, what position or which positions do you feel like are now at the top of the Chiefs' need board or at the maybe make the most sense to them given this draft board at pick number 31?
I'm going to go number one, edge rusher, number two, receiver. Now,
I think that's my answer
If they reverse that order and they go receiver one, edge rusher two, I'm fine with that as well because I do like the depth at edge rusher this year. But I think that your primary concern needs to be to go in and make sure that you're able to recoup strength in an area that was one of the biggest reasons why they won the Super Bowl this past season, which was their pass rush. Number two in the league in sacks, and it was the biggest reason why they were able to overcome a team like the Bengals in the championship game. And it's so important for them to be able to keep that a strength, because you can't rush the passer in today's NFL. It makes it so much harder to win. So I think edge rusher first. But if they see a guy like Zay Flowers or Hyatt, or even we were talking about before, about a guy like Jackson Smith and Jigba and how he's starting to fall on some mocks. If he falls to 31, I don't know how you pass that guy up because this is a guy that you didn't think was going to be
there. Two things on JSN real quick. I can't imagine him falling to 31. And B, if he does, you sprint.
Yeah.
You sprint to get that card
in. But we thought that Karlaftis wasn't going to be there last year when the Chiefs were picking at 30, and he was there. So it's very possible. We see this happen all the time.
I was afraid to mock him because it would have been silly at the end of the first round.
Me too. Uh-huh. And I was laughing when I saw, I think it was Brugler or someone.
Yeah, I was like, there's no way in hell he's going to be back there.
I'm not going to be there at 31. Just like the CBS guy last year, I can't remember his name, who was mocking Karlaftis to the Chiefs pretty much all draft season, and then they got him at 30. So at this point now, I'm not going to discount that it's possible that something comes up and he ends up getting drafted at 31 by the Chiefs.
Jackson Smith-Njigba is so good. I feel so bad that he was hurt most of the year. Because I was building this guy 60, up with people.
60 snaps last season for Ohio State?
Yeah. And some people doubted how hurt he was, but I think he was hurt.
I mean, I was building this stuff up with, just imagine how good that wide receiver core would have been with him. They're ridiculous anyway, but Garrett Wilson, the AFC Offensive Rookie of the Year from Ohio State, in that same room as Jackson Smith-Njigba, Chris Olave in that same room, and Jackson Smith is the best receiver out of that group. Put it this way. When those guys were together, Jackson Smith-Njigba had 95 catches, 1,606 yards. Garrett Wilson, 79 for 1,058. Chris Olave, 65 for 95. I mean, he's head and shoulders better than them. And it's because, wait, the best receiver, because last year doing the mock shows or draft shows, I was like, just wait, Ohio State's best receiver hasn't come out yet. And you know what? He's probably not even the best receiver there now with Marvin Harrison.
And by the way, just by the way, so Smith-Njigba, correct me, am I saying that incorrectly?
I think it's Smith-Njigba. Every time I've heard it, it's Smith-Njigba.
Okay, you know what? JSN. We're going to call him JSN until I figure it out exactly.
Can you put that in a sentence for us, Chris?
So his big knock, or I guess the big concern about him, was his top-end speed, and he didn't run the 40 at the combine, but he did do the 20-yard shuttle and the three-cone drill, both of which he recorded the fastest times of any player at the combine. His 20-yard shuttle time, 3.93 seconds, was the fastest recorded by any prospect at the combine since 2017. So we're talking about elite-level agility. I've heard him being comped to Julian Edelman, which that's a comp I love a lot for like just an elite slot receiver that doesn't have that top-end speed.
Hands. You got to have hands. Eddie Reed loves hands, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's why Junior Hemingway stayed on this team for so long, because he could catch the football. I'll say this with 31, and I understand what you're saying. You know, like a Derek Hall or B.J. Ojulari that should be there as well. What's going to be better? And this is what the Chiefs had to determine. What's going to be better at 31? Is it going to be, because again, I think they're picking 25th. Because four quarterbacks and two running backs will be going, and the Chiefs have no interest in either one of them. I hope not in the first round.
Oh, they take Bijan, dude.
He's not going to make it that long.
He might. I don't know.
Bijan's going to be gone. But the bottom line is, what do you value as better? Like, if you're sitting there and Jordan Addison there, or Jackson Smith-Njigba's there, and Jalen Hyatt's there, do you sit there and go, wow, we really didn't? Because the Chiefs have put first-round grades on them. And last year, they only had 19 or 20. Trent McDuffie's at the very end of that list where they picked last year. But they look at it and say, all right, I think it comes down to that. Who is a better player? Is Jordan Addison better than a Derek Hall? Is Jalen Hyatt better than a B.J. Ojulari? And I think that's where it comes down to. 100%, I think when you sit there at 31, you say, which quality of player we get? Is this a receiver that should have gone earlier? Or is it because this is not a big, and the tight ends are so good that the wide receivers are kind of getting pushed to the back? Who is the best or second best at that point, maybe third best wide receiver? Or is it a better edge rusher? Because the quality of both can be there at 31 when you can get a starter. I don't know if you necessarily think first-round grades on either one of them.
Sorry to interrupt you, but how do you do that if you're the Chiefs? Okay, I get trusting the draft board, right? There's a reason you make it. But
the board speaks.
But if you're splitting hairs between guys and you view both of these positions as positions of need, how do you compare an edge rusher to a wide receiver? If I'm saying, I need both, and these two guys are right, and these are neck and neck in our book.
Who's a better player? I mean, how do you
determine that for guys who play different positions?
Just look at him, say, all right, you bring him in the top 30 visits, everybody gets a top 30 visit, or 30 visits. Who's the better player? Who's got the better football acumen? Who likes playing the game? And who do you see as that dog? Is it a receiver? Is that Jalen Hyatt? Like, man, this guy's blowing you away in every sense of the imagination. Or is it an edge rusher you say we can build up there? I will say this, though. All this changes on what they do with Juju. I mean, if Juju finds a way to get back here to Kansas City, as they sit right now, that's not a wide receiving room right now. It's not. They definitely need a wide receiver. And if you say, okay, well, we can get one in the third round or we can get one in the second round, can you? Because if you're not going to bring in free agent wide receivers, which it doesn't look like can be, it's not going to be a top free agent wide receiver because the top they already have in McCole Hardman and Juju. They're top 10 free agent wide receivers. So I think you have to look long and hard. Is our guy better than the guys that are there now? We expect Sky Moore to have more development from it. But I think the Chiefs can't keep neglecting wide receiver because Patrick Mahomes really I talked about it and asked people honest questions. I said, who's the second best receiver Mahomes has ever played with? Who's the second best wide receiver? It didn't just pop right out to you.
It's Juju.
Probably Juju, yeah.
Juju or Sammy.
It's not great.
Juju or Sammy. That's not great. That's not great for an NFL, two-time NFL MVP, a guy that went over 5,000 yards.
Yeah, but that's also, I mean, that's a little.
No, it's good on him.
Right. It's like it hasn't exactly held him back.
They had no 1,000-yard receivers this year. Yes, Kelce got his 1,000 yards of tight end, but they've got to have a guy that can do that. Here's where they're drafting.
Well, to be fair, Juju would have got to 1,000 had he not been in.
No, he would have. He would have. Put it this way, all the comp picks finally came out last week after we talked on the last show. There was three comp picks given to the Chiefs. One of them goes straight to the Giants.
Goes to the Giants for
because of Kadarius Toney, which is a hell of a trade, by the way.
Hell of a trade. But first-round talent for third round?
But the Chiefs have 10 picks. One first-rounder, one second, one third. I like this. 2 fourths, a fifth, 2 sixths, and 2 sevenths. And one thing about it, you say, well, you really care about the seventh-round picks. Well, I've always liked them because it's better than trying to recruit them. Some guys want to be undrafted free agents. If you go to the seventh round, you're like, okay, then you can pick your team.
Yeah, you can pick your team.
But when you pick them in the seventh round, they got to come to you. But you know what? Jalen Watson got 2 picks in the postseason being a seventh rounder. Isaiah Pacheco became your starting running back being a seventh rounder. All these picks are valuable, I think, to the Chiefs' success. But they can do some moving and shaking with the 2 sixths and the 2 fourths. One of those fourths is going to be a valuable move up for the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, they could use those picks as ammunition to move up. But like I do agree with you, Bink, on the idea of whoever you think is the highest upside based on whoever's available at those two positions, I think that's what you go with.
Okay, so that's actually an interesting. I'll throw a theory at you. Wait, I wanna do something really quick here. Because you mentioned the word upside, which to me, when I look at the draft, upside is different than like who is the best football player, right? And we can get into this deeper conversation about, okay, who's more ready to contribute right away, who can be a day one contributor versus who has the higher ceiling. With wide receiver, knowing that if you re-sign Juju Smith-Schuster, right? Let's do this. You re-sign Juju Smith-Schuster. You know you have Kadarius Toney. You know you have Sky Moore. You know you have MVS for another year. That's not a great receiving room, but we just saw last year that's good enough to be a very productive receiving room, and it's good enough to have the number one offense in the NFL. If you have that, if you have this baseline of I know what these guys can do, is that a position where you would be more comfortable going boom or bust in the draft, knowing that our baseline with Mahomes and Andy Reid and the guys that we have in that room already is pretty high?
I personally, yeah. I mean, I don't really like the safe picks. I don't really like going for the guys who was like, oh, well, he's probably not going to be like the worst receiver picked here. Like, he's not going to be the worst edge rusher picked here. Like, I want to go with the guy who has the highest elite potential. Because I think that's what you do when you want to win championships. Patrick Mahomes wasn't the safest pick. Like, if the Chiefs were going to go safe at quarterback, they would have taken Deshaun Watson.
Well, I like what they did last year. Can you start for this team?
Yeah.
We don't want to back up. Can we look at you? Are you a starter? Are you an NFL starter?
And they drafted guys with tons of upside. Joshua Williams is a guy they liked because of his size, his length. But he was all upside when he was coming out of college. What was it? North Carolina A&T, I think it was.
Fayetteville.
And then same thing with like Jalen Watson out of Washington State. Just all upside. They were like, he's got the physical attributes we like. We think we can coach him up. I think for me, I would much rather they stick with that approach. A guy that you feel you can coach up to be an elite level player, even if you have some struggles early on. We obviously saw that with like Carl Loftus this past season, where early on in the season, he was playing a lot, he was getting some pressures, but he wasn't getting to the quarterback very much. And then as the season went along, he got better, he improved, he was very coachable. By the end of the season, he was an asset to the team as a pass rusher, getting to the quarterback. So for me, I would much rather they go that route than try to play it safe, because a lot of teams try to play it safe in the draft and it doesn't work for them. The Chiefs, obviously, you don't want to like go too risky and take someone that has a very high chance of falling off for whatever reason, but you want to take a guy that you feel like is very coachable and you can turn into elite talent even if he's not the conventional pick there.
Sure. Let me throw an interesting theory, and I like this going forward with the Chiefs. Since we're having that debate on who's better, you go wide receiver or edge, right? What if you get in a situation where you have 2 out of 3 picks at the end of the first round, where you're going to probably get either one of your guys? I'll give you that. Chiefs are drafting 31. And I go by the Rich Hill draft chart. If you haven't ever, no one's seen it, Google Rich Hill trade chart.
Yeah.
It gives a point value to each pick, how much they're worth. And if you're sitting here thinking about who can the Chiefs trade, go to that because NFL teams use this. Used to be Jimmy Johnson's, but they use this. All right. So the Chiefs, as they pick number 31, that's assigned 190 value, 190 points. Where, for instance, the first pick in the draft's 1,000. So 190. All right. The 33rd pick in the draft is 180. The 32nd pick in the draft is 194. So if you took the Chiefs' second and third round picks, which second round is worth 82 points, the next round is worth 40 points, you'd have to take a 2, a 3, and one of your 4s, and they could possibly trade up in the top of that second round. Because wouldn't you like that if you're picking 31 and maybe 34, something like that? That you, if there's two guys, you say, we got to have these guys, your chances of getting them are so much greater if you're picking that close
They'd
together.
They'd have to really like someone to try.
I could see them moving up in the second round because I think the second round's going to be loaded.
I could see that too.
There's a lot of fringe first rounders that aren't going to go because of the quarterbacks and running backs taken. I think they could move up to the top of the second round. If I'm the Chiefs, I do that because they've shown they can draft towards the end of the draft and be successful. I would find a way to move up in this draft to have two picks there really close together.
Okay, so now I want to do something. I want to flip the script a little bit here because I think we do have a tendency to assume a lot with the NFL draft. Like, and we're all seem to be on the same page here that wide receiver, pass rusher, or defensive line in general are positions of need. These are positions where you're losing a lot or losing significant pieces, and you need to infuse it with more talent. I want to ask about your guys' draft fears. The picks that would make you scratch your head. And I know it's really easy to do this, so I want to put some parameters on it. I don't want you. We know the Chiefs aren't going to draft a quarterback, okay? We all know that they're not going to move up and select a quarterback in the first round. They're not going to select a quarterback
really
in the first
round. Are you really going to Stetson Bennett in the
seventh? No. This is a conversation about the first round only.
I just had to add that name.
I did some mocks this past week on a PFF, and I took him in the sixth round.
This is a...
I mean, if you want a winner that can go in a 90-yard drive...
He's a practice squad guy.
He might be able to wait around.
I had to find a way to put the name Stetson Bennett.
And I can't believe we're 30 minutes in and you haven't mentioned Jalen Hyatt.
I was about to say, what about Jalen Hyatt?
I mentioned him earlier.
Did you slip him in? Yeah, he slipped him in because I didn't
okay,
see it.
So I want you to think about positions that are not totally out of the question, but ones that maybe you're maybe a little concerned that, like, I've heard people talking about the Chiefs targeting this position, and I really don't want it to happen. And let's go with the first two rounds. Is there a position that you are maybe fearful that the Chiefs might target that you absolutely do not want them going near?
Well, I mean, I do not think that they draft running back. I mean, I really don't think
but
that
the
they
reason,
would.
But the reason
but
why you're bringing it up...
That would scare the living hell out of
so
me.
So you're
if they
bringing
did.
It up, though, because I think there's maybe a little sliver of you that thinks they might do it.
No, I don't think they do it. I really don't, but they did take that chance on Clyde. I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're happy with Pacheco. And I think
is Isaiah Pacheco enough? You're right. You may lose Jarek McKinnon this offseason.
Bring in LeGarrette Blount. You know, here's the one thing about Pacheco, and I really like them. They need that third and one thumper. Chiefs are worst team in the league on third and ones. And they're not going to do quarterback sneaks like the Eagles. Not going to do something fancy like that. Get a thumper in there, but that would be the one position. Or punter, we still know about Tommy Townsend.
Oh, gosh. Broke my heart.
Tommy could be gone.
Broke my heart when I heard that they gave him the tender that could see him sign somewhere else. And by the way, I led you to that, Bink. Because
or center. How about that? Center.
I led you to that because I wanted...
I know that was a trick question.
It was a trick question because I wanted to talk... Because I know you guys have probably seen the same stuff I have.
Yes.
I know you guys are perusing every single mock out there. And you've seen the mocks that have had the Chiefs taking Jahmyr Gibbs out of Alabama or
Bijan Robinson.
Who knows? Maybe even Bijan Robinson if he falls. And I'm going to tell you this right now. Everything you said, Bink, is right. You are not wrong about anything. You are 100% right. And there are mountains and mountains of evidence that suggest you shouldn't spend a first-round pick on running back, especially when you have other positions that need to be addressed in this round. However, Bijan Robinson in Kansas City would be so much fun. Have you come on? I know you watched him at Texas.
Of course,
it would be so much fun. Can't we just have fun a little bit? Can't we just have a little bit of fun here?
He's a tremendous player to watch.
Come on now, guys. Come on now.
But if you were going to ask me who they actually, the other positions I think are all on the table. And I wouldn't be shocked if they upgrade the tight end. Like a Tucker Kraft, I really like him. A South Dakota State guy, he's going to be. I think this guy's got unlimited potential. Reminds me, Dallas Goedert came out of South Dakota State. Won a national title. But this guy is probably a second or third rounder if the Chiefs go in that direction. Wide receiver, offensive line. You can make a case for almost every player taken. I remember when they drafted Dee Ford, I had to try. I had a show. I was doing the day shift then, the 10 to 2. And I was trying to make a case on why the Chiefs drafted Dee Ford.
Hated it.
And I had to rack my brain. I just put, well, why did they do this? You don't want that cognitive dissonance in radio saying, why did they do this? Can then turn and talk yourself into why they did it. Like, that's one thing you don't want to be sitting on draft night saying, why did you do this? But pretty much the Chiefs are in a position where everything's really, really on the table. I would say the top three for me, though, are wide receiver, offensive line, and edge rusher. Then tight end right there with it.
Yeah, I think tight end's probably a little bit less likely. I feel like it's really edge rusher, wide receiver.
But if you're going to do it this year, to do it. Tight ends aren't going to be this good for a while.
I actually think, though, there's like some good gems that you can find on like second day, maybe even early third day.
I mean, if they're saying this is the tight end draft, the best in decades, you get a tight end.
Yeah.
Because you know what? The next year might not be that good.
So there's
Brock Bowers, and you're not getting him.
Yeah, you're not getting him. But there's a lot of good tight ends that you could find later on. So it's like, I don't feel like there's like this immediate need for it as I feel like you would need with receiver and with edge rusher. Obviously, running back wise, yeah, we can't.
You know what's so interesting about this conversation is that, and Bink, I know you did a million. How many official mocks did you do last year?
Last 2 years, I went to like 7 or 8.
How many of those mocks did you have the Chiefs selecting a wide receiver in the first round, knowing they had 2 picks?
Well, Christian Watson probably had in there. Most of them I did because I had Sky Moore.
Did you have a single mock where they didn't select a wide receiver at all in the first?
I had some like Ebikadi and I had some edge rushers in there, but I had Christian Watson and then at the end when I had Sky Moore in the first round.
Because I think looking back on it, nobody's really complaining because you got 2 day one starters on defense and McDuffie and Karlaftis.
But I mean, it was brilliant.
If I would have told you at the beginning that the Chiefs weren't going to go wide receiver on day one, I think a lot of us would have been a little surprised.
Being a little surprised because you're wondering, when are you going to do it? Because you keep saying, when are you going to do it? Like Travis Kelce at his age, when he's going to be playing at 34 years old, eventually you say, well, we have Noah Gray here, but you're going to have to pay Noah Gray here soon. And do you really think that Noah Gray is the next Travis Kelce? But there's a few in this draft, like a Dalton Kincaid or a Michael Meyer, that could be like a Travis Kelce at some point. And again, you don't want to waste it. You want to say, man, why didn't we, like those receiver drafts. And you said, well, we didn't take a receiver. Well, that was the best you're going to get. And you didn't take that chance. I mean, that's when the best is there. And you didn't take the chance of getting it. I still want to see him, you know, this being a great tight end. Athletic tight end. You're not going to see a tight end class like this for quite a while. But you do have to realize this tight end class is not coming around again. So if they took a shot there like your guy, Darnell Washington, wouldn't complain about that at all. If they went him in round one, I would not complain.
I think the one position I would complain about is safety. I saw like Bucky Brooks from NFL Network. He put, it was like I think his second mock. He put Brian Branch from Alabama mocked into the Chiefs at 31. No.
And safety's down this year, too. It's not like last year with Jalen Petrie's of the world.
Exactly. You know, it's not a great safety class. And, like, the Chiefs, aside from, like, the McDuffie pick last year, haven't shown a bunch of interest in, like, using high-value draft picks on DBs. They generally like to find those guys later on in the draft. And last year was kind of them bucking that trend a bit because, obviously, you know, we saw that with McDuffie, with Brian Cook, first couple rounds you get those guys. But, like, the Chiefs are not one of those teams that looks at that and thinks, we need to spend a high pick on those guys. They're looking for the gems that they can coach up. So I don't think that they're gonna make that move at all. I think that's a position.
And they're drafting on house money because there's like everybody in there is drafting to beat the Chiefs.
Yeah,
and they're drafting To beat who? Because it used to be the Patriots and Steelers, but they don't care.
That's an awesome spot to be in as a franchise. I think to your point, Chris, one thing that I agree with you. I do think the Chiefs have a few guiding principles that they tend to stick to. But one thing I've really enjoyed watching in the Brett Veach era is that we saw these first 4 years or so when Patrick Mahomes was on a rookie contract. And you got to operate under different circumstances when you knew we have some extra assets to toy around with while this guy who is giving a superstar production on the field is not being paid like a superstar. And now that he is being paid like one of those guys, I feel like we've seen the philosophy shift, or maybe we're just watching a guy who is not going to be beholden to one strategy. Right, like last year, to your point, I think generally speaking, yeah, they're not going to spend big money on defensive backs, and they're not going to spend draft assets or high quality draft assets on defensive backs. But they saw a guy who they viewed as being a top three player at that position. Maybe they had him in the teens on their draft board, and all of a sudden you're in the early 20s. He's there. Boom, let's go get our guy. He can be a day one starter for us, right? You don't sit there and think, no, but we don't draft cornerbacks. You think, no, he's our guy. So we're going to move up and get him. And so going into this draft, like, there's part of me that wants to look at their draft history and say, well, this is what they do and this is what they don't do. But I do think this is a guy who is willing to change with the circumstances and let whatever happens that year on that day, if it plays into our hand, we're going to take advantage of it. Sure. I don't care what we've done the last 3 years.
I will say this, though. The Chiefs are in a better situation than they were yesterday. They're in a better situation than 8 o'clock this morning or 9 o'clock this morning. Juwan Taylor answers a lot of things for the Chiefs. It takes a lot off the plate. When you have a guy like that you believe can be your left tackle, because you're not going to find him in the draft. I think we can all agree you're not going to get a first round. Unless you get drafted in and get Broderick Jones or Peter Skoronski. But you may not trust those guys to be left tackles.
Unless
on
one of those guys has a Laramie Tunsil moment.
They might, might be moved over like the right tackle at some point.
To your point, how often do we see tackles get drafted in the top 15 that never become high quality starters?
That's all the one thing about it. And you're trusting this guy. And you're trusting this guy with Patrick Mahomes. Not only that, Doug Peterson, he'll tell Andy Reid everything he wants to know. And he'll be honest about it. Like, Doug Peterson values their deep friends. And if Doug Peterson gave this guy because you know he gave him a great recommendation. And I'm sure Andy Reid did the same thing with Ron Rivera when it came to Andrew Wiley. But isn't that such a relief not to have to worry about that? Because that really throws a wrench into things. Now you're talking about using several picks to go up and get a left tackle. Now you don't have to worry about that anymore. Now you can have a little more flexibility with your picks, but you're not necessarily worrying about that left tackle because I don't think you were going to get him in the draft. As I've been saying, I think they want somebody with experience to be that left tackle. But today's news was great for the Chiefs draft, in my opinion, because now you can – and who knows what's going to happen? Who knows what's coming tomorrow or the next day? Is one of these other positions going to come off the board? Or say, well, we don't need a wide receiver as much now, or we don't need an edge rusher as much now. I mean, what's next? Because hopefully some of these answers get answered by the draft.
I would not be shocked if the Chiefs maybe not get like a star edge rusher, but like an experienced veteran guy.
What if it's Carlos Dunlap coming back?
What if he comes back? But what if like I know like Za'Darius Smith was taught he wanted his release from the Vikings.
Za'Darius. I like Za'Darius. Man,
he was hurt too much. He was hurt a lot last year, but like he would probably be like a low risk 1 year deal type situation. Yeah. If you could get him on that. At that point, though, it's not like we have to take one at 31. Now it's like we can go second round.
Well, I wanted Brandon Graham.
I'd like him too, but I.
But he's back in Philly now.
I think the Chiefs are in a good position where they don't have to go and make a bunch of commitments to fix some of the issues that they have on defense.
All right, enough listening to us blather on about what we think's going to happen. Somebody who's in the know with the NFL draft, Kathy Nelson of the Kansas City Sports Commission. This is a big, big year for the NFL draft because it's here in Kansas City, and Kathy Nelson is a big part of that. And fortunately for character concerns, Jay and Chris were fortunate enough to sit down and chat with Kathy Nelson. Here is their conversation.
Pleasure to be joined by the president and CEO of the Kansas City Sports Commission, Ms. Kathy Nelson. Kathy, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Well, it's finally upon us. I know that this has been a journey for you. I've talked to you all along, whether you've gone to Chicago, you name it, for the NFL draft, and we finally get it here in Kansas City. The airport just opens up. We're going to have a bright, fancy new airport for everybody to come to the draft. But thinking about this process and everything you did to get it in Kansas City, what's it been like?
A lot of meetings. There's no doubt it's been exciting. It has been stressful. There are certainly highs and lows of the process. It's exhausting at times. I mean, we meet daily with the NFL and with different people around our city to be prepared for what's about to happen to us at the end of April. But it certainly is a highlight of my career, no doubt.
I think one of the most interesting things about this process is like, what goes on behind closed doors, those meetings with the various leagues and whatnot? Because obviously, you know, draft, World Cup. What happens on your end to be able to talk to these leagues and convince them that Kansas City is the right location for their event?
Well, it takes someone opening a door, and that's Clark Hunt and Mark Donovan. And it takes an energy and proof of our interest early on in the process. These things don't just happen overnight or over a course of a year. It takes years of development, of relationship building, of discussions, and then of negotiating, and then really to prove that our city shows up for these types of things. And our city certainly has proven, you know, way back in 2015 with the World Series parade, that we know how to show up, we know how to celebrate. We know how to celebrate safely, and our fans are great. And I think all of that coming together makes these things possible.
Okay, I think one of the things, too, you don't have to sell. And I always feel bad for you. It's like trying to sell with one arm tied behind your back about that airport we had. And now it's much easier because we have the Dream right. Airport. But you won the draft before we got that airport. And how many people are you expecting, Kathy, to be in Kansas City for that event?
Well, conservatively, I would tell you we're estimating probably 300,000 people, and not all of that will be by air, maybe 20 to 25%. Again, it's kind of a guess, right? We've never hosted this before, and and it's still somewhat new to be moving around the cities. I mean, it only started moving out of New York back in like 2015. So I think as you think about this, yes, we're estimating, but we're guesstimating at the same point. So we think maybe 300,000. I know Clark's thrown out 500,000. And then when you see how our city shows up for the parade, really nothing would surprise me right now.
Yeah, they really have. It's the largest footprint of any draft that's happened in the NFL. And really, like the Union Station, the World War I Memorial, has really become kind of like our signature in Kansas City, and like the Arch in St. Louis, you name it. But it's really become that signature stamp of what Kansas City is. Kathy, what can fans expect to see? The draft is free. We have a lot of people asking, what can they do? You've seen the taste of the towns and the different things the NFL teams have, but what can fans do if they come down to the draft to kind of encapsulate everything and enjoy themselves?
Well, I think that's what's so exciting. This is free for everyone to attend, and we will have the OnePass app on your phones ready to go later. On actually, hopefully by middle of the week. And I think as you really dig into what that OnePass app is, you'll see lots of things. But if you show up on site, and you're correct, we have the largest footprint so far of the draft. We're at 3 million square feet of space. Mm. Not all of that will be utilized for fan-facing things. Of course, that's a lot of back of house, but it still is the largest footprint. The footprint in Las Vegas was 1 million square feet. So we're three times bigger than Vegas already, just in that outline. But once you arrive on site, you'll enter through the South Lawn. So think of where the Federal Reserve Bank is located behind the south side of the National World War I Museum and Memorial. That's where fans will enter back there. And then you can come through that NFL draft experience. There'll be so many things to do. There'll be things to see. There'll be engagement opportunities, you know, from the 40-yard dash to just about anything you can think of, looking at locker rooms and rings. And if you're a football fan, to see all 32 clubs will be very special. Then as you progress through that and enjoy that experience, which will take you a while, as you come up, especially on Thursday near the memorial, that's where the red carpet will take place for the prospects. So they'll walk that red carpet area. A lot of celebrities and other things happen in that area late Thursday afternoon. And then, of course, our natural amphitheater, the North Lawn of the Museum and Memorial, looking into that draft stage, that the draft television show itself is the most important piece of the draft. That's where that business meeting takes place, where clubs select their future players. And that's what's so important. So that Friday night and all day Saturday, you'll see a lot of energy on that stage. There'll be musical acts. We'll have some local celebrities, of course, our comedians that we like to engage with, and really just, you know, all things football. Then sprinkled throughout that footprint will be all of the media from NFL Network to CBS to ABC. And you'll see a lot of people that you would recognize off national television floating around.
Kathy, I'm so excited about this. I'm sure your phone's been buzzing. I'm sure when you've been out and about talking to people, I know here at the radio station, we've talked to so many people that are so excited for this. And people that don't normally watch the draft, like, take an interest in this draft and care about the prospects that are coming in, because it's in our city, which is just so different. I don't know if you felt that. I'm sure you felt that buzz in every corner and avenue you've been in.
Well, and I think, and you just said it, even if you're maybe not someone that tunes in to all the hours of the draft that happen over 3 days, just to come in and celebrate all things Chiefs and all things Kansas City. The Chiefs have a really unique, fun area inside of the draft experience for their fans. I think that's exciting and new for the NFL to be able to activate a club like that. And again, it's a reason to come out and just check out all we have, the food and beverage vendors that will be on site. You'll see a lot of local flair throughout that. There's a barbecue competition on Saturday. There's youth activities on the football fields we're building out. So I think people will be surprised. And it's not only just the draft and, like I said, draft experience, but it's the national and global exposure that this event will bring to our city. So if you really don't want to show up and walk the area, still watch and tune in on television. I think you'll be really proud of it as a Kansas Cityan of how we look in that spotlight.
Now, as a native Kansas Cityan growing up, you generally heard around here over the years about how nothing comes here. We don't have big events like this. And, you know, it's kind of flyover country, as other people like to call it. But now Kansas City is becoming a major destination for events. What has that process been like, trying to change that narrative here from us being flyover country to a center stage for events like the draft?
Well, and I'll share just recently hosting the Big 12 men's and women's basketball championships, and the new commissioner out of New York, he had never been to Kansas City until basketball media days in October. And then, of course, he was here with us for a week. And following the women's championship on Sunday, he stopped me and he said, "This was unbelievable. Kansas City showed up." And he goes, "We need to figure out our long-term working relationship with your city." He goes, "This was beyond expectations." And I think we need to continue to do that for anyone that comes to our city, whether that's, you know, someone from the Packers or a Raiders fan or whomever that fan might be, to even to our business travelers and our conventioners and people that are just coming in to check out Union Station and World War One because they heard about it through the draft. We have to continue to be a welcoming city. And so the last few years, having successful teams helps open that door more so than anything else you can imagine. Having the Casey Current building a women-specific stadium opens that conversation more than anything else, more than advertising I could buy. That's why we continue to support sports in our city, because it's opening doors to future and greater things.
Great stuff. Kathy, I have one more question for you. We're talking to Kathy Nelson, President and CEO of the Kansas City Sports Commission. All right, so when people come to town, anything special at the airport or billboards or like around this town, will people know the draft is here April 27th?
Yes. Yes, I would tell you that has been a lot of work, and multiple people from around both. I also run Visit KC. I serve as CEO for Visit KC, and my marketing team at Visit KC and my marketing team at the Sports Commission have been so hard at work on this. And of course, with the NFL support and the support of the Chiefs, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with the branding, the theme we've come up with for our city that we will roll out in the next couple of weeks, and just how you will really know that the draft is here. And that's why the NFL is so excited, because this is, our city will embrace this. And it's not like when you're in New York, you have to know that the draft is there to get there and to figure out where it is. Once you arrive in Kansas City, you will know that the draft is here, whether you knew before or not. And I think that's really exciting for us.
I can't wait, Kathy. I'm so excited about this coming to our city. You have put so much work in with the draft and the other events. We didn't even get into the World Cup and stuff like that, but you're such a great ambassador for our city, and thank you for this. And I know you're part of it, a part of the team with the Chiefs and everything else, but you put a lot, and I mean a lot of work into this, and you were selling an airport that hadn't been built yet. And it's amazing the amount of work in that draft night when you see 300,000 people or more on that hill, and you take a deep breath and realize what you've done for the city. But Kathy, always like talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jay. Take care.
Big thanks to Kathy Nelson for joining Jay and Chris for a lovely discussion here on Character Concerns. That's going to do it for this week's episode, man. Things are crystallizing. Tampering is happening. Contracts are being signed, and I would imagine...
It's not tampering now.
Well, it's legal.
It's not legal. It's just contract negotiations.
Oh, that would have been a good name for a podcast. Legal tampering.
No, it's officially the legal tampering period has opened.
It's just the free agent negotiation. It's not legal tampering.
It is legal tampering. No, I think by the letter of the law.
These essentially are the two most important days of an NFL calendar.
What's the second?
These 2 days of tampering.
Oh, these just number one and number two?
This sets you up, not only for the draft, your team next year, these 2 days right here.
I think the draft's days are more important.
And somewhere the NCAA tournament's going, legal. What are you doing to us? Why do you do this to us?
By the way, if you guys ever kick me off this podcast, I'm going to go start a competing podcast, and it will be called...
Character Issues?
No, it'll be called Legal Tampering.
Legal Tampering, yeah.
Man, you guys are never invited.
That's my next show.
If you haven't already, please do us a huge favor. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you're listening. We appreciate you so much. We'll be back with you again next week with another episode.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games and a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.